This is Go Mountain Goats podcast, episode 26. My name is Finley Wild. This episode is brought to you from the Warnsdorfer Hut in Austria for reasons that will become apparent. It's a pleasure to be on a trip with Ben Barsley and John Morgan. Today we are going to talk about speedy tours. So for anyone who has maybe seen me on Strava, they might have seen speedy tours pop up over the years and maybe not been sure what it was all about. So we have a bit of time now, so it's a perfect chance to go through that a bit. So, hi guys.
Hi Finn, hello.
Well, let's set the scene. John, can you sort of tell us where we are at the moment?
So we are in the South Tyrol in a bivouac hut, which was an unexpected place to end up. We were not intending to be here today, but luckily it's very warm and there's a wood fire and we've got just about enough food. So it's all good.
Cool. Yeah. And what is the sort of actual room like? Because some people listening might not have, you know, might not know much about alpine huts or anything.
Yeah, so it's part of a big hut that would be a summer hut, but obviously it's the middle of winter and there's not many people around, so it's a tiny little corner of the hut has got an access door, and inside it there's a tiny little wood store. Then there's a small kitchen with enough room for about five people to sit around the table, and then there's a small bunk bed room with enough room for just enough people, which is, I think, about 11 or so, something like that.
Yeah, I think is there how many of us, there's like, is there 10 of us here in total, and there's 9 beds, so we're top to tailing in a double bunk for 3, but that's okay.
At least it's going to be cozy tonight.
Totally.
Yeah, unexpectedly, there was another team here, so yeah, we got company.
Yeah, luckily they're lovely, and because we weren't planning to be here, we don't actually have a huge amount of food, but they spontaneously produced soup for us, and we managed to raid the cupboard and find some old porridge, and they've given us some of their honey for the porridge for our afternoon snack, so it's all pretty convivial and friendly.
So we're coping. We are coping. Yeah.
All is good.
Right, so what is Speedy Tours?
So it's the nickname we give to our journey across the Alps, and we had a dream to do a transalpine crossing entirely on foot in the wintertime, as much as possible on ski. So it's ski touring, ski mountaineering, but we're filling in all the blanks. When there is no snow to be had in the valley bottoms, then we're doing it on foot, and we are refusing to accept any form of transport, any ski lift, no taxis, no buses, no trains, no nothing. Which most of the time doesn't really change it, but there are times when we have to walk 25 kilometers up the road, as we did yesterday.
this is the Grand Alpine Arc, which is spanning from the Mediterranean to hopefully to Vienna, is where we want to get to.
Exactly.
We do a week each year. Some years it's been 6 days, other years 7 days. I think the initial idea might have been Es Tresiders, or was it yourself?
I'm not sure. It might have been mine, but I don't know. I think we'll have to ask Es. So yeah, we should say that we've done the majority of these weeks as a four. So Es Tresider normally comes along, but he got COVID last year, so that was probably wise he didn't come. In fact, he had COVID in the family, but he didn't even get it himself. So he thought he was about to come down with it. So he didn't want to take the risk of being isolated, and he didn't want to take the risk of infecting us. So he graciously didn't come. And then this year he's super busy with a house renovation project and loads of other stuff. So he took a heavy-hearted decision to miss this one as well. But he sent us the emoji with Arnie saying, "I'll be back for next year."
Yeah, shame not to have him here.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah.
And Ben, what's our strategy in terms of kit? Because obviously John said we're doing some walking in the valleys, but we're also skiing and we're in huts sometimes. How have we done that?
Sure. Well, we all have done a lot of ski racing, where one goes with as light a kit as possible, and we're trying to use that ethic and go as fast and light as possible with enough of a safety margin. So we've all got maybe sacks that are slightly bigger than Schemo race sacks, and we've got enough warm clothing, and we have glacier travel kit, and we have avalanche safety kit, and sometimes we take a bivy bag, and we have a very small stove and a canister of gas and maybe one evening meal as an emergency during the whole week, but that's about it, really.
And axe and crampons,
yeah. Good point. Yeah. So our bags are pretty light. When we load up with water at the start of the day, it adds a significant weight. Yeah. And by the end of the day, our bags are quite a bit lighter. So it's definitely minimalist. Yeah.
The only time the bags are really heavy is when you have to do a big road walk. And then it does, obviously, skis and boots on your back as well. And that does start to bite into your collarbones.
Yeah.
As the kilometres munch by hour by hour.
Yeah, and food, we really only have food for that day, other than one emergency meal. So we're pretty light, but we're pretty careful to make sure we're not going to put ourselves in a compromising situation with respect to amount of food.
And this is one of the rare occasions tonight where we're actually eating. We're in a place where we didn't think we're going to end up, and so we are going to eat our emergency meal. So we're pretty happy to have it.
Definitely. Yeah. So we're not carrying much food, and part of that's because a lot of the time we can stay in either staffed huts where we can buy food up in the hills, or down in valley bottoms. Last night we stayed in a nice guest house, basically at the top of the valley.
Yeah,
and had a slap up dinner and breakfast, and
yeah.
So that means that we can basically keep the bags small and kind of throw the credit card at the problem a little bit of food.
It's one of the beauties of being in the Alps. It is obviously very populated and developed. It's really different to, say, what you did in Norway, where you had to do food drops. We're not really that isolated. You can usually go downhill to someone that's going to sell you food. You can sort of push it a bit in terms of how much you carry, and we don't need tons of provisions. Plus, we don't have very much space in our bags.
No, we sort of tend to traverse a wilderness area in a day, don't we, really? We're in the wilderness, the back of beyond, but then we'll hit a valley at night or a mountain hut.
Yeah, that works well.
And we touched on the fact that we're using this super light, like Skimo racing kit. But we're not in a Skimo race with a planned course, and someone else, the race organizer, has decided that's a safe place to go that day and thought about the avalanche risk. Obviously, we're in big mountain terrain, sort of traversing that. And it feels like we have got a good balance of, we've got full avalanche kit, proper crevasse rescue stuff, axe and crampons, etc. Clothing, obviously.
Lots of warm clothes,
But I think it'd be difficult to do it the way we've done it if we were any heavier, really.
Sure. I think particularly because the skis we're on are so light and so narrow, that if you have a proper big heavy bag, then you're going to really struggle on the skiing. It's not that easy as it is, but it's manageable. In good snow, it's quite easy to ski on these skis, but in bad snow, it is difficult. And I think any more weight than we've got, and it would be a real struggle at times.
And we'd feel that we were moving much slower. We actually still feel like we're moving relatively fast in the mountains, although a lot slower than race pace. It still feels a relative.
Yeah, I think it's cumulative, isn't it? Because it's easy. Anyone can bust out sort of 2,500 meters a day on any particular day. But if you're going to do it for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days, often breaking trail and loads of decision making, then that's really cumulative. And I think you'd really struggle to do it with any other type of skis and boots.
You'd have to do much shorter days, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And how much have we planned out each week? So it's a week per year. We missed 2 years because of the pandemic. I don't know if we said that at the start. So we started in 2016 at the Med. We've done 4 years since then. Then we had enforced break of 2 winters because of COVID.
Yeah.
And then got back last year for the 5th installment. And then now we're on the 6th installment, 2023. So, how far in advance have we planned out what the days are going to be?
Well, I suppose we do a fair bit of planning in the weeks and months leading up to it. Looking at maps, looking at the various resources. Luckily, there've been quite a few books written about it. There's a very useful website by a British guy, David Hamilton, who did it and has written an extensive website with GPXs of exactly what he did. And we're not doing exactly the same route as him. It really varies according to the weather. But a lot of the planning can be done beforehand using apps such as FatMap, such as we've discovered in Austria, Compass works really well, and we can upload the GPXs of his route. So that can give us a really good idea. So we can kind of map out a very rough idea of where we might go. The reality is it changes, and we make decisions on the hoof every day. And a lot of the time we're scrambling to cancel one accommodation and book another one because we may have gone further than we thought or not as far. And sometimes we just find things along the way.
Or divert, have to change direction for whatever reason, weather.
Because there's not a defined route for this traverse.
That's exactly it.
So you've got the width of the Alps to decide where we're going.
Yeah, basically between the Mediterranean and Vienna, we're trying to follow the main spine of the Alps, but and avoid long walks down valleys and stay in the big hills if we can.
So we end up crossing the border a lot, don't we? As I said, I guess they put the border between the Alpine countries on the highest ridge, so we tend to be really close to the border. We were we've been in Austria mostly, but we dipped in and out of Italy a couple of times as well. And I think it was one time when we were in a different country every day, one of the times.
Yeah. I mean, that's this year. And obviously we spent a lot of time in France and Switzerland as well and Italy. Yeah.
And I think we've all found that one of the really satisfying things about the trip is that sort of planning on the hoof.
So we've
done our homework, and particularly John, you've been really good at doing loads of the homework
on really enjoy it.
Options. What did other groups do? Because, there's been maybe six teams or so doing slightly different variations. And then us thinking, well, what can we do? What's likely to be possible for us? But then, the weather changes, avalanche conditions change.
And also new information appears as you go along. Yeah. We had, I think it was yesterday, we had originally thought we'd do a really long climb to a high col and then a massive long descent down to the valley at the end of the day, which in retrospect would have been hideous because it was a south-facing descent. And then the impetus to change that plan was actually the fact that the valley accommodation looked really expensive and uninspiring. And so I think you, Ben, said, let's look for some bivvy huts. And we just spotted it on the map. And I was poo-pooing it, going, it'll just be an Italian tin shed with no blanket if you don't want to go there. And actually, when you Googled it, it's this state-of-the-art, triple-glazed, amazing South Tyrolean hut with incredible hospitality. It's the highest hut in this part of Austria, and it was just stunning. So
yeah, we were blown away. It was staffed, and we got our dinner there, and
use the Dolomites. Amazing. So it's the kind of you can plan as much as you want, but things will come up sometimes for the worse, but often for the better. And it just seems that when you think, none of this is going to work, something happens, and it just all does.
I think the great thing is that the four of us have a very similar outlook and all very adaptable and don't mind things changing on the hoof, and the dynamic works really, really well. I think I've been in group situations before where that would have been difficult. Somebody would have got quite touchy about changing things on the hoof, but it works super well for all of us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think it's helpful that we're all similar levels of experience. We've all been knocking around snowy hills for a very long time, and we're well aware of the things that might happen and the things that need to change. And we always chat constantly about all the little micro decisions, just like which particular bit of a particular slope do you go, and we're not afraid to change our minds perhaps every 5 minutes if it seems like the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think that's been great, isn't it? The sort of chatting, bouncing things off each other, and I suppose there's been a bit of learning probably, for all of us in how to sort of communicate that. And
I remember last year you noticed one particular day that there was a massive shortcut just as we were about to go a much longer way, and it worked out incredibly well, and it was we hadn't spotted it on the map beforehand, and
it's liberating to be in a group of equals where everyone is taking a big part of it, and it makes it much more relaxing and much more enjoyable, really, to be part of a sort of group dynamic where everyone's playing an identical part.
Some people might be wondering, sort of, why do we want to do this? Is there any particular reason? Hopefully we've explained a little bit about that by sharing our psyche for how the days sort of go.
Good question. I suppose it came for two sources, really. For me, it was an awareness that people had done it, and the fact that I knew little bits of the Alps quite well, but there were huge bits I'd never been to, and I never really quite understood how every bit relates to another bit. And there were so many bits of the Alps that I hadn't been to, and I just thought, well, this is the perfect excuse to try and join the dots and just get to know those places that you'd probably otherwise never go to.
Yeah, and I think as well, I think something I feel very strongly is we all need purpose in life, and to have a long-term objective like this is something to look forward to every year, to spend a week with your buddies and go somewhere new. And every year it gives you something to look forward to, and it's a great long-term project.
Yes, it is.
And we spend quite a bit of the time when we're just skinning or skiing and there's not decisions to make immediately. We spend quite a bit of time sort of talking about all sorts, but particularly looking back at previous years. And, oh, do you remember that?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
We've covered a lot of ground now. So we started in the Med 2016. We're roughly, this year we restarted just south of Innsbruck. So we're over halfway, aren't we?
We're well over halfway.
We've been getting on for three quarters, maybe.
I'd say, possibly.
We're really getting there now.
Somewhere between two thirds and three quarters. We're probably only about three full days travel, maybe four full days travel to beyond glaciated terrain. And that feels pretty significant because obviously the Alps is full of glaciers, but we've come, we've covered so much ground, and the latter section in Austria is just a bit lower, and that will make a big difference to our speed of travel and the lightness of our bags, because we can suddenly ditch our harness with all the jangly bits and the ropes.
Yeah, I do remember that the first couple of years we'd done it, I got home and had a look at the map and couldn't quite believe what a small distance we'd covered. You know, the Alps do span a really, really long way.
Yeah.
And I did begin to wonder how old we'd all be by the time we finished.
Well, we've got one pensioner already. We might be having another one quite soon. I'm hoping to get there before I'm 60.
We tend to do about 200 kilometers. I think last year we did 230
in
7 days. Last year was really good weather. It hadn't snowed for ages. It was really fast travel, wasn't it? Although some of the descents weren't, there was no epic powder, but it was for traveling A to B, it was really fast.
Compacted snow, yeah.
It was super safe, wasn't it? Avalanche capping one the whole time, which doesn't mean no risk, but it means absolutely minimal. And, you know, you're very unlikely to have a problem unless you deliberately put yourself in the wrong place. So when we could essentially carry out the exact plan that we'd, it's probably the only week that we've ever managed to completely do exactly what we guessed we might do.
Yeah, it wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we're obviously, so we've done, how many days have we done now in total? We've done something like 30.
Getting on for 40.
Yeah.
It must be about 40.
35, 40, 40 days.
Yeah.
And so from the Med, you're literally on the coast. We've traversed through the Mercantour, the Keira, into Dubai, south of the Mont Blanc Massif. Just touching a bit onto
Italy. Maurienne, Vanoise,
And then the abbreviated Haute route,
into the Valais,
and then into the parts of eastern Switzerland that none of us really knew. And it's fun that it was very wild the first year, that was totally new to all of us, but then I think certainly in most of us had seen big chunks of a lot of what we did in the intervening years, but it's now totally wild and unknown to all of us.
Yeah.
Every step of the way is completely new.
That's really beautiful.
South Tyrol is amazing. Incredibly beautiful mountains, lovely people, not overpriced, only very small ski areas that you occasionally come across. So it's a joy to be here.
That's great. So as we said at the start, the whole idea is it's human powered. So we obviously get transport. you know, however that is, to the start of our week. But then for the whole duration of the 6 or 7 days of the tour, we're either skiing or walking. No public transport, you know, during the traverse, no lifts, anything like that. I think that kind of hit home quite early on the very first year, the end of the first day. We couldn't find where the guest house we were staying, and the manager, she popped in a car and came down a hill to get us and said, "Oh, pop your stuff in the back." And we were sort of about to, weren't we? And then we realized, we can't
do that.
Yeah, Donna Blount on day one.
Yeah. You've got to carry everything and walk everywhere. Yeah.
We've had quite a few offers of lifts.
Yeah.
Raised a few eyebrows.
Yeah.
There was one guy, was it like 2 or 3 days ago?
Yes.
The guy in the van who stopped and had a chat because we were a very long way from snow with skis on our back, and he was pretty interested in here. And he was like, "Oh, you know, please let me take you."
And he was going to do a big detour.
Was totally
he?
Out of his way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, no.
It's cool. You, I think, John, have got, you've probably got the most comprehensive library of Alps traverses out there, I think.
I think so, yeah. I think I'm up to maybe 5 or 6 books, and I don't think there's any more. There's online resources too. And there's a beautiful one that came out last year, which it's just really great to see how everyone does it in slightly different ways. And it's obviously impossible for everyone to repeat the same route.
Yes.
The weather will dictate what you do. And I'd say most people do it piecemeal like us. There's not many people who do it in a continuous journey.
Yeah.
It's obviously a huge challenge in itself.
Yeah. One of the fun things is you've plotted on sort of large scale maps, different places, different accommodation, where all the different teams stopped in different colors. And you can sort of try and work out from that what we're going to use. And it's sort of fascinating to think of them going beforehand, but I think it's fair to say quite a few different very different varied approaches. This is our challenge, and it's working really well.
And then we're lucky because we're on the lightweight kit, we can often do maybe 1.5 to 2 times what other folks have done, just because they'll have been on much heavier kit.
So maybe we should talk a bit about this year. So the 6th year, Speedy Tours 6. How's progress been so far?
It's been remarkably good, perhaps until today.
Yeah.
We've essentially not quite done what we thought we'd do today, but the first 4 days were pretty much exactly what we wanted. And there was a lot of uncertainty, I'd say, on all of those 4 days.
Well, quite full on mountain days, weren't they?
They were all big. They were all either long or lots of up and down or
glaciated
both.
Terrain.
And various steep looking lines that you just think, well, is that actually going to go? But luckily they all did. And we had an incredible snow on the first day. We had a lot of luck with snow in the valleys that was just enough to carry us a long way on cross-country tracks, because clearly it's a lot quicker on flat ground to be on skis, skating, poling, as opposed to walking. And we are here to ski after all. But we were pretty lucky that the snow was low enough, in some places down to 1,200. But that wasn't looking too certain beforehand. We've been super lucky. Today we've had a bit of bad luck, really. It was cloudy last night. And crucially, that meant there wasn't a refreeze. On the first climb, it didn't feel too warm because there was a breeze and it was early. But it became very apparent on the east-facing descent on the opposite side that the snowpack was pretty saturated, really heavy. And then when we got to the bottom of that descent, it just felt hot as hell. And we were just desperate to avoid any steep slopes. There was one slope that was fine. It was just about touching 30 degrees for not very long, and we elected to go up that one at a time. But we all realized that to execute our complete plan to go beyond this bivvy hut that we were in would be foolish. It was socked in, cloudy, and too hot. So we've cut it short, which is why we're here.
Because what tends to happen at this time of year is it's quite hot during the day, and so the snow gets really saturated and gets really, really soft. And then each night it's clear and it all freezes and it goes bone hard. And so consequently it's safe for traveling on. And that, as John explained, that didn't happen last night. So, So the snow was really soft and soggy, and consequently that means it can be dangerous if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
There's also really bad viz as well.
Absolutely.
Pretty crucial passage through much steeper terrain. And we even diverted onto a little walker's path briefly to avoid the steepest part of this gully that we had to join the bottom section of. So it just felt a little bit exciting.
Yeah, it was. It was. For sure.
And when we look back, when it cleared later on, we're like, whoa, I'm pretty glad of modern navigational devices.
Yeah.
I have to say,
quite it's exciting.
Getting around the hills is a lot easier than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
With map and compass. I mean, we do have a full set of maps for this trip where we debate leaving them behind, but we're often glad we haven't. But the reality is, with all the various GPS apps that are out there, you can just exactly locate where you are. We can superimpose the ski lines of the existing maps and also the people who've been before us, and we can upload their GPX tracks on as well. So we've got loads of information in our hands, and we have lots of redundancy, and we've all got the stuff on our phones, and we've got power bank backup. So it doesn't feel like we're taking any risks on the nav side.
And we can superimpose avalanche terrain as well, can't we?
So
it makes it really handy for being able to be super careful in those spots or avoid it altogether.
Yeah, exactly. Hmm.
What would you say, let's ask you first, Ben, what would you say, what makes kind of a good day, a good Speedy Tours day? What makes that? Are there any that spring to mind, or what? How would you define it?
Yeah, a good Speedy Tours day. I think generally, There's a good mix of type one and type two fun. So that's to say it's fun in the moment and then there's maybe a bit of suffering. So we're generally up pretty early. We'll have maybe stayed at a place that provides a pretty amazing breakfast, which is a contrast to the wilds that we're going to be in. And maybe we'll get snow from the door and be out the door skiing pretty early, maybe with head torches on. We often get to a high col. We may have some good snow to descend. And there's generally quite a late finish as well. So generally sort of we're out in wilderness. We don't see other ski tourers, like, very rarely. And we feel that we've been somewhere pretty exciting and out there for the day. So I think just when you're exploring, going somewhere new, every corner you go round, you can be quite stunned by how beautiful it is. So I think for me, a large part of it is seeing new places and just being wowed by how wonderfully beautiful it is. Yeah.
Yeah, because we're not actually sort of our primary goal isn't seeking out the best descending snow, is it, John?
No, and we like it when we get it, but it's definitely about the journey. So we're not deliberately seeking out summits. If there's one on the way that's we can go up, great, but we're not going to make a 2-3 hour diversion to a summit. We did go up a summit the other day, but it was only like half an hour out the way and we had plenty of time in hand. To answer your question a minute ago, I would say for me what makes it really is the you could sum it up with uncertainty and adventure. So a good day for me is when you've got this thing plotted in your map and you've thought about it and it looks like quite a meaty, challenging day, but it's got some uncertainty there. You just don't know if it will actually work. Do you have enough hours in the day?
Yes.
Can you get up that terrain? Will that descent actually go? And then the adventure is when it actually does.
Yeah. I'd say you hit the nail on the head as well about it being all about the journey, because all too often in life, you focus on the goal and you don't enjoy the journey. And I think all four of us have just loved it each day. It is just about the journey each day, and it doesn't actually really matter where we started or where we end up, or if we have to walk on a road all day.
Yeah, totally.
It's just an adventure.
At least 90% of the days are standalone, brilliant days out.
Which is great. Yeah.
And it's incredibly exciting. Like, the other day we were sort of sitting having some food and we were sort of looking ahead for a few days and trying to work out, oh, can we go even further? Because things have been so going basically to plan as best as we could hope for the first 4 days. I think probably today initially we were all probably a little bit disappointed when we realized, oh, we're just going to have to stop here like halfway into our planned day. But then, of course, you just reset and you say, well, that's just the way it is in the mountains.
Yeah, it's the way it is. And actually, we've been pretty lucky. We've had essentially no bad weather this week. Yeah. Even though we've done a half day today, we're still down in like a 1,500 meter day. And we got to the hut at like one or something. And it's like, well, we've actually had a really good day. We were going to do more, but this is actually pretty good. We've not had a blizzard. We've not had to make a huge diversion and miss out. Loads of beautiful stuff. We're going to continue tomorrow where we were going to go, and it's the forecasts are much better, so it'll just work out fine.
And somehow a spanner in the works has added to uncertainty, which I think we've all relished somehow or other, because now there's new challenges and new unknowns.
Yeah, and we had no intention of staying here, but it's nice that we have got the contingency. We did have that extra meal. Yeah, so we're not going to be hungry. We're not going to be knackered tomorrow. Because that's why we carry it. So it's good to, you don't use things like an ice axe crampons in your spare meal very often. But when you do, you're really glad you've got them. You used your ice axe crampons the other day.
As a slightly steep slope to descend. And I took a look at it and decided that for me, it would be better just to boot down it a little way.
It was quite a high consequence slope.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You didn't want to slip.
Exactly.
I suppose the other thing for people who are more familiar with Bothies is these huts, generally have, basically always have mattresses and blankets. So all you really need is for sleeping is a sheet sleeping bag, which keeps the rucksack weight down massively. So we know we get here and there's going to be blankets and,
I'm glad that's pretty much 100% in the case. There was talk in the COVID times of them removing all the blankets and all the rest of it, but they seem to have shelved all those ideas. Mm. And it seems to be that every Austrian house at least does have a wood burning stove. So we've got an unused gas cylinder, as we had a similarly luxurious bivy hut 3 nights ago.
What have there been any really bad days in the whole traverse? Has there been anything that sort of stands out as?
Well, I think we could maybe speak for Ez on that one. Going back to the first year, we were all pretty new to it. But we did obviously know we needed trainers because it was a day and a half to get to the snow. So we all had trainers. And then we got to the snow in the Alpe Maritime. And it was old snow. But then there was a massive storm. And there was just so much snow down to very, very low. Ez then chucked his trainers away. None of us did. But then,
so he thought he was going to be on ski boots the whole time.
Yeah, he thought the whole thing was going to be skiing, which is completely understandable.
Or he hoped. Yeah.
Situation, and he also had the smallest bag of all of us, so it was incredibly hard for him to fit his stuff in. So I think he was happy to be rid of them. But unfortunately, it was Cat 3 or Cat 4, and the route we had planned was up some really steep slopes, and it would have been suicide to continue with the mountain agenda. So we had to do it was another 25k walk up the road. So Ez was in his not very comfortable race boots in his aliens. And he didn't grumble, but poor guy. I think that's the kind of only mistake.
Yeah.
So that was a bad day for him.
Yeah. I'll just add that he brought some really old trainers. So that's the reason why he was quite happy to throw them away because they were trainers that were worn out.
Yeah, they were going to go in the bin anyway. And he just thought that that snowfall was the perfect opportunity.
Yeah.
we've had sort of some frustrations where I made a big mistake on, I think it was the second year, and we ended up skating a long way up the Moriane Valley. With the thought process that we were then going to be able to go into the Benevolo area and link some of the lovely places that I have been to before. But this was not compatible with the forecast, and we ended up having to backtrack and go exactly back down the valley where we come. So we basically did, 80% of the day was spent going one way and then back down exactly the same way again to not very far from where we started.
Yeah, that was a shame.
That was my bad call.
But I think because we're not, our aim isn't to seek out, we obviously want good snow, but we're realistic. We're not getting that all the time. The aim is progress. So in a way, it doesn't really matter if it's bad snow.
Special training snow.
Most of the snow hasn't been that great, but it hasn't detracted from the adventure in the slightest.
Yeah, we've had every possible fall.
Well, one day, it snowed. I think in the second year, it snowed a lot overnight, and we really had to think really carefully about a safe way to get through. And it was in kind of normal conditions, it'd be quite, I suppose, a relatively boring sort of valley safe option.
Mm.
And it wasn't a massive long day because we were breaking trail in snow.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was really tough because Ez was very good at keeping us exactly to, was it 100 paces each? So breaking trail in front, someone would be 100 paces and then they would go to the back and the next person would break trail. And, you know, this is in real deep snow, goggles on, pretty bad weather.
Yeah, pretty
and,
cold.
And I think to start with, we thought he was being a bit melodramatic, but very quickly.
We were very well. I mean, it's the cycling model. That's what the cyclists do. They take their turn at time front.
And you do your 100 paces in the front breaking trail, and it felt really hard. And everyone else behind you was thinking, what's taking so long?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you'd then get to your, you'd then go to the back and someone else would take it over and they'd find it really tough.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But that, you know, then is a really memorable day, making our, continuing the journey basically. So making the best we could of the situation, changing the plan. And that was really rewarding.
Yeah. And it's the sort of day that probably if you'd planned to just go out for one ski tour, you'd have thought it was a pretty awful day. But, no, it's just been part of the journey.
I think it's great that one of the things I like doing is looking at the videos that you make every year, Finn, to refresh the memories.
Yeah.
And
on YouTube, Finley Wild on YouTube.
And it's absolutely brilliant. Every year you produce these videos between kind of 2 and 5 minutes long and just little snippets set to cool music, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's just a lovely way to remember the years.
And I'd just add that Finn's got so much more in reserve than the rest of us, then he can charge out front and get his little GoPro in and out and get really good footage, whereas when the rest of us try to do it, we just can't keep up or get decent quality footage.
Well, that's our additional safety factor, because if we just kegel over knackered, Finn can just carry us as well. I just picked up his bag in the hall and I was like, oh my goodness, he's been carrying this all week.
Wow.
I don't know where he's going there. SLR, GoPro, all sorts. Amazing.
I was going to add as well that it's also differs from a typical, what you might think of as a typical ski tour, because we're trying to make progress east. Well, now it's east, initially it was north. There's these a lot of kind of valley sections, or having to go where the terrain takes us. So we are sort of getting to valleys and then finding these little bits of snow which we can skate along. Like you did mention the cross country tracks.
Yeah, they've been helpful.
Yeah, or hiding on the north side of the valley where the snow's remaining, and finding little slivers to join together.
And that definitely wouldn't be everyone's cup of tea.
No,
but it's really fun, because it's amazing how often we have just found just a small, sometimes even just, skier with a bit of snow to kind of keep going. And there's always a bit of competition, I think, on the kind of the micro route choice between us, isn't there, to find,
the best tongue of snow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely win that one with your oldest skis. You'll basically eke out the last snowflake in the valley before skis come off and
it happened 2 days ago. We had a descent to do by a road and we managed to link together lots of little slivers of snow, and it ended up being really good fun and not much walking at all.
No, it was amazing. Yeah. I mean, I was convinced, because we went down this massive 2,000 meter south-facing slope, and you could see that most of the snow had gone, but it was just sheltered from the afternoon sun by the ridge to its right. So I was fully expecting to be walking from 2,000 meters down to the valley, but we got down to about 1,300. It was pretty satisfying.
Yeah.
Next question I was going to ask, I'll go first. I was going to ask you two if there's sort of any unexpected, like, pros or cons that have come out from the trip and these journeys. And the thing I suppose I was thinking of, or that came to mind, was going, because we were going between all these different countries and alpine areas. My language skills are pretty bad, but we are getting quite a flavour of the different areas. And we'll speak to locals, or there might be a hotel manager who's really excited or interested in what we're doing. Being in the South Tyrol has been really interesting. The food's different, culturally it's different. It kind of gets you interested in the history of the place as well. And not that I've delved into that a ton yet. It's sort of sparks the interest in those kind of things.
And I think it's almost every day you go somewhere, you're like, oh, I must come back here and check that out and really see all these amazing objectives. We skinned up past a hut called the Berliner Hut in the Zillertal a couple of days ago. And it would just be a magic place to spend a week in this bivy hut, which is just surrounded by these awesome big mountains with huge glaciers and just awe-inspiring summits, which we traversed through. But it just made me think, oh, I must come back here. And you have that feeling almost every day. Oh, yeah, you know, look around, let's see what's there, and let's come back. So, yes.
Yes, and it's interesting, even like yesterday, we went up a valley and all the barns were designed the same. And I'd never seen barns designed like that with this little balcony with a sort of interesting dome shape. And they're all quite similar variations on the theme. It's fun to see that these changes as you go through different regions and,
Cool. Yeah. What I thought we could maybe just kind of wrap things up a bit with talking about what's the plan from here? What do we ideally want to happen?
As in tomorrow?
So this is day five.
Yeah.
We've got a maximum of
seven days. So we've got another 2 days. So it's looking like without the things becoming very overcomplicated, we'll leapfrog past the hut, the guarded hut we were going to stay into. And end up in a valley base where we know there is accommodation, which we can't book, but we will wing it, hopefully. And then maybe we'll be able to string out a long day to the Rudolph's Hutter if conditions look good and we think it's a goer. With a slight proviso, we've got to get back to Innsbruck the same day. So it might not be that easy, but we'll try and work it out.
And that's always part of the adventure as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Actually getting back to where we started, where we've maybe caught public transport from or left our cars generally.
Yeah.
So, that may take some time. So we need to make sure that in 2 days' time, we don't finish too late to get public transport out of where we are.
Yeah, I've got a feeling that might involve quite an early start.
Yeah.
In retrospect, we've slightly had our fingers bitten today. Perhaps if we'd really thought about it, we could have anticipated what might have happened. But it does actually appear that there's a lot more snow on this side of the col that we've just come over than we've seen at all the whole trip so far.
Yeah, really quite surprising.
Yeah, it was all of a sudden from essentially not loads to a very large amount of snow.
And we have seen that a few times during the trip. Suddenly we get over a col and we're quite surprised that there's a lot more snow than there was the other side.
Yeah.
And I suppose we're always balancing, you know, we do need to rest and recuperate each night. And, you know, we have an early enough start. So early starts back to back.
Exactly. I think the first year, didn't we get benighted every day?
Yeah.
So we're getting slightly better at time management now.
Yeah. And then and we have at times said, oh, maybe we should come out for 2 weeks to get more of this trip under our belt. But I think it's fair to say that most of us are pretty tired by the end of the week. It's maybe the recovery isn't quite there each day.
I think there's only one of us that could have managed a 2 week speed tours each year.
Yeah. And it's neither of us.
Exactly.
Well, I think we need time to reflect on these weeks as well, don't we? So it's nice. Coming back to what you said, Ben, it is nice to have this overall project to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't want to eat all you take at once.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, Ben, it is about the journey. And I know I will feel a tinge of sadness when we get to the end.
Oh, likewise, for sure. Yeah, on the way, it'll be a real shame.
Okay, final question then on that note. How many weeks do we think it's going to take after this one to get to Vienna?
I've got a feeling it might be only two more, but
I'm going to go for three.
Okay.
When I look at the map, probably
better informed than I.
When I look at the map of Austria, we've kind of gone through the little sticky out bit on the left. There's a massive lump that we've not really made in.
Well, that's good news to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we're now. Are we now fully in Austria?
We left Italy yesterday, but then
for the last time.
For the last time. The Italian border dips down south and we're 100% Austria now.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Great. Well, hey, really fun to chat through some of that, given that we've got a few hours of chill.
Yeah.
Our dehydrated meals have been soaking with hot water nicely.
Yeah, our vegan risotto should be just ripe for scoffer work.
Yeah, it's 20 past six in the evening and we've not eaten a lot today because of our diversion. And we're ready for it.
Ready for an early night and early start tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic. Thanks, Finn.
Happy days.
Cheers. Thanks for listening. That's the end of this episode. Those videos are on YouTube under Finley Wild, or you could look at gomatandgoats.com. It's been fun to chat. See you next time.